Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
All right. It's the day after, or 2 days after, Money in the Bank. And it felt like sort of the brand split went away. In some ways, we got Gunther, we got Liv Morgan celebrating, we had R-Truth dressed up as Uncle Sam. If you didn't know it was the 4th of July, you definitely knew it after watching Raw tonight. And we have two special guests joining me to talk about this episode, which saw a pivot away from Money in the Bank and towards SummerSlam. Not only will we have a roundtable format, but we also will be taking your calls. But to clear up the confusion about hearing three voices at the beginning, I will break from our usual format and introduce Tom Stout first. Tom, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Wade.
Absolutely. And Javier Machado. Javier, welcome.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Wade. How's it going?
Good, good. So I do want to let people know we're going to be taking your calls. So we kind of thought we might have lighter calls than usual if people are out watching fireworks or celebrating. So I thought we'll do a rare treat, a roundtable format with three of us here live. But we will absolutely be taking your calls and maybe get into some emails too. But first things first, Javier, is the rehabilitation of Becky Lynch now official with her no-holds-barred win over Asuka in the main event tonight? And we can talk a little bit about Money in the Bank and kind of the fallout from that. They've got a number of women's storylines going on right now, but Becky remains the top star, no matter who is champ, Bianca Belair or Liv Morgan. What'd you think about her presentation tonight?
Becky, well, I love the fact that it looked like she basically has not changed out of her outfit since Money in the Bank. That was great. I think with the victory here, the emphatic victory, I think it's a safe like point where, you know, they're signaling that it's the turning point for her, particularly since they were saying, you know, that she's got to get Asuka out of the way, that she's having issues with Asuka. So, I'm thinking that it's to set up her, you know, going after Belair would be my guess.
And this wasn't the type of setup and finish that would normally be done for a heel. If a heel demands a no holds barred match and then beats a babyface, that's letting, you know, that's like what a babyface would do. And so in Becky's case, it does seem like it's a deviation from sort of booking 101 to have the heel challenge a top tier babyface like Asuka to a match of her type and win. Tom Stout, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it seems like on a night when we understandably, due to the holiday, got a lot of matches that were just matches without too much substance behind them, this was the blow-off of a two-month-long feud, at least that's how it felt, with the significance of Becky now, yes, having her fiercest other contender out of the way, cleared out of the way on her path back to Bianca Belair. Meanwhile, a bunch of other people are throwing their names into the hat to face Bianca, and I was thinking we might be heading for some kind of multi-person affair at SummerSlam, but this does feel like the step in the direction of what might be the correct storyline in doing the full year. You know, Becky returned last year at SummerSlam, and now the match at SummerSlam again could well be a one-on-one between Bianca and Becky. And it just leaves you wondering, okay, what is the end of Becky's quest here? Because she's got Asuka out of the way, but she's still madly driven by wanting to get that title back. So does she achieve that? Or, because we need an ending to the story here, she can't just keep, you know, salivating over the championship forever before transitioning to personal feuds or becoming champion. Does she give a handshake finish to Bianca at SummerSlam? There's got to be some sort of significant development here. But yeah, this feels like this felt like the step in the direction of a more interesting women's championship match for Bianca at the next big show.
Javier, Jake Barnett from ProWrestling.net tweeted, Becky winning there is odd, considering her downward spiral. I wonder if they got bad news about Rhea Ripley being back in time for SummerSlam. What's your take on the lay of the land and that possibility and where you think this does, what the options are for SummerSlam based on what we saw tonight?
Yeah, I was thinking about Rhea Ripley because I thought that that was going to be Belair's opponent for SummerSlam, and then it was going to be Asuka and Becky at SummerSlam. It does feel that this kind of sidelines Rhea Ripley, because I mean, I don't think you go back to Asuka and Becky again. That would kind of make no sense. I mean, WWE's done that before, so, you know, it could still happen. But this does feel like it's good, particularly since there were 4 or 3.5 weeks, I think, away from SummerSlam. I don't think they have enough time to really, even if Rhea Ripley were going to lose like 1 or 2 more weeks with only 2 weeks of build to what would be one of the more important matches, I don't think they would do that. So it makes sense that they're going to be putting Becky into place. But I also won't discount that the match being a multi-person match either.
Yeah, I don't think that can be ruled out based on what we saw tonight. Another topic, just separate from Becky, but still in the women's division, is Liv Morgan's celebration promo tonight and then teaming her up with Bianca Belair in a tag match afterwards. I thought this was actually a smart presentation to lift, have a pit stop on the way to SmackDown, share the spotlight with Bianca, who is, you know, a level above Liv Morgan for sure, and kind of look like, you know, they want her to look like she belongs at that level. And that came after her underdog scores big at a pay-per-view, thank you fans for making it happen promo. As I mentioned in my Raw report at pwtorch.com that I was typing up and posting during the show, Liv Morgan is not a top-level wrestler. She's not a top-level promo compared to some of the other wrestlers right now in WWE and in her division. But I get watching her, why fans like her and what the appeal is and why she's, I think, being pushed a little bit above what I think she showed just months ago when she was given that top spot. There is an earnestness and a believability to her story that reminds me a little bit of Sasha Banks early on, and I think something that connected her with fans, which was the sense that it really did mean a lot to her and that she felt the fans were part of that, the fan support was part of that. Tom, what'd you think of Liv tonight, her performance? Do you disagree with anything that I said in terms of framing her? And just kind of the booking idea of, hey, let's have her and Bianca share the ring as sort of a pit stop for Liv on her way to SmackDown.
No, I absolutely agree with you. Something that I've said to you on this show multiple times this year is that I feel Liv is having her best year in WWE yet, by far, because she's someone whom I've never seen it in, someone whom I did not expect to survive nearly this long in WWE. Although I do understand what fans see in her, and I think you're spot on with exactly what that is, and she wears it on her sleeve. I think this was a nice bonus for her tonight. I guess I don't know if I'll mention it later. So, like, I guess a slight self back pat for thinking that I can't go as far as to say, oh, I called it, because I didn't think that critically about the women's field. But I did look at Liv and think, you know what? I think this could be time for her to get that. I wasn't expecting the cash in. I actually after the title match on Saturday, my work rained out, so I was watching live, and I just I walked away. I was like, oh, this one's over. I'm going to take a break. And then I come back and she's holding the championship. Whoop.
Oh, no.
But I think it's a good way to capitalize on what has really been an excellent year for her so far. She's really shined in the spots that she's been given, which is something that she has not done before. She's always shrank away from them. This I'm not sure if tonight was necessary, but it is a nice bonus. What I really liked was just the packages that they put together for her. They're selling it as this wonderful feel good moment very effectively that really comes through and seems like a big deal in the packages they're putting together for her. And it feels very similar to what they tried to do with Nikki Cross 1 or 2 years ago, however long ago that was. And I was rooting for Nikki, but unfortunately that just fell flat on its face. And this feels like a similar formula that's actually working this time.
Javier, Liv Morgan journey and has, as Tom said, maybe lately over delivered on expectations, but the support that fans have and the support in the locker room for her does seem like she's somebody who's going to get more chances. So I guess my call to you is, or my question to you is, where is she in a year? Like, based on, you know, what you've seen of her over the last year, is this sustainable? Are they effectively moving her into a position where a year from now she'll be talked about as, say, a top six female on the roster?
Well, I think her greatest strength is also her greatest weakness, which is that she's authentic. You know, she's a likable person. And because she is that, she seems to struggle most when she's being asked to read off a script and, you know, basically act, as opposed to, because, you know, her promo today was repetitive, but it was, you know, you could tell it was heartfelt. But so it really depends on what they do. I think this ends up being just kind of like a, you know, once she loses, it's kind of like forget it, you know, and just use it as something, you know, whenever they need somebody to challenge for the title, you know, you could always go back and say, oh, yeah, she held the title once. You know, so, I mean, that's worst case. You know, best case is if they handle it right. I mean, the people really want to like her. I mean, she, you know, so, I mean, the you know, on Twitter was, you know, all the references were like everybody congratulating her, and particularly even from other companies, which is, you know, someone has to be special to get so many from, you know, from people, outside, as much as she got. So, I mean, I've always hoped for the best, but, you know, we'll see. Cause I mean, she's someone that, since she's not as talented as some other people, that it really is, she needs to be handled expertly. And I don't know, with the kind of blasé attitude, you know, that kind of feels, the promotion feels, I don't know if they're going to actually do that and just leave it up to her to sink or swim.
All right, very good. Well, let's pause and do more formal introductions here of the show, and then we'll get to our calls. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, July 4th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, covering the latest pro wrestling news and live coverage of premium live events, pay-per-views, and TV shows, along with editorials and so much more. Hope you're checking out our website, pwtorch.com. If you're interested in delivery of our paper copy newsletter, you can go old school and sign up at pwtorch.com/papercopy. And we also encourage you to go VIP and access our newsletter, including our back issues, over 1,700 back issues, when you go VIP, along with ad-free versions of this show and a ton of VIP-exclusive podcasts throughout the week, and an ad-free VIP-exclusive website with all our free website content, along with bonus articles and full library access. Just go to pwtorch.com/govip for full details. You can sign up with Patreon through Apple Podcasts using your Apple account, or with credit card, debit card, or PayPal to get our full VIP experience. The other voices you heard, as noted earlier, are PW Torch contributors Tom Stout and Javier Machado. Javier, tell people just briefly what your key contributions are to PW Torch and how they can read and hear more from you.
I do the primers for pay-per-views for AEW and I was going to say Impact, but Impact when I'm actually caught up, and WWE. And I also do some stuff with New Japan. It's been on a hiatus just due to work, but I do want to do stuff for the G1 Climax that's coming up. So I'll be doing some podcasting for that on the New Japan Pride podcast. See how I can schedule that. But I'm planning on, even if I take vacation for that, Wade.
Wow, awesome.
Yeah, so also, you know, I always get tapped for the holiday shows, since Wade knows that I am his only undead contributor, as I have no life yet still walk the earth.
And Tom, same to you. Tell people about your contributions.
After it ended 3 years ago, I finally got around to finishing the Walking Dead comic book, and Javier's tempting me with tangents already, but you can hear plenty of those tangents from me on the VIP side of things as Kelly Wells and I do NXT 8 years back on main roster programming. You've been hearing commentary reference things that happened 8 years ago in NXT a lot lately because a lot was going on. One of the major things that happened just recently that you can hear us analyze is the debut of Becky Lynch on TV. She had just started with the company, been doing some live events, and she just showed up on NXT. The most recent episode that we did features the very first match that had all four of the horsewomen in it. And I also do the monthly podcast Bonus Point, which it might be too clever of a title, but if you don't know what it is framed through the NXT program, preliminary program Level Up, so that's where Bonus Point comes from. It's just a little bonus point once per month that gives you some information on what's going on in the lower levels of NXT's or of WWE's developmental system. The most recent episode that's up is a very breezy listen, only 29 minutes long, and it is, among other things, about WWE's Next in Line program. I think a lot of us hear, ooh, hey, WWE Next in Line, Gable Steveson, blah, 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 and we don't really know what the heck it is. I certainly didn't. So I did some research and I looked into the individuals who have signed to it. And if you're interested in any of that, go VIP and listen to Bonus Point.
Excellent. So let's give out the phone numbers and get on with our Raw analysis. A lot of 4th of July themed stuff that we can get into, including, well, evidence that Vince McMahon is still in charge of creative. We'll just put it that way. Our number, if you haven't called us yet, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. If you are not listening to us live, you are invited to join us live for future episodes. Just go to wadekellerpostshow.com and navigate to the live show link, or you can find a direct link to the live stream on our Twitter account, at PWTorch. I usually tweet a link and the phone numbers in the email around the time Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown end every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, respectively. And you can also find that information, a direct link, email, and phone number at pwtorch.com in my TV reports every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So lots of ways to join us live. We encourage you to do that when it fits your schedule. Otherwise, we certainly are happy that you're downloading and or streaming the show after the fact. When you call, if you are listening to us live tonight or anytime, be sure to push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard and indicates you're not just calling to listen in, you're calling because you want to be brought onto the show to ask a question or make some comments. You can also participate by email, and that works better for those of you who, after wrestling's over, you move on to other things and don't want to listen to the show until the next day. You can still participate by email. Wade Keller, podcast at pwtorch.com. That's Wade Keller, podcast at pwtorch.com. So let's get rolling with our phone calls, and we'll begin tonight with William in San Diego. You are up first, batting leadoff. William, thanks for calling. What stood out on Raw tonight for you? And happy 4th.
Hey, guys. Happy 4th. Thank you. Yeah, just a quick FYI. I didn't get to, like, email about this because, you know, it was kind of a last-minute decision, but I was at the show. If you guys have any on-site questions or anything? Not. I do have some questions of my own. So let me know.
How close do you live to the arena? Are you calling us from the arena, or are you just, like, live across the street? That's fast turnaround.
No, I'm at the park. The parking lot here in the arena, just waiting for a bunch of cars to get out. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. No, I'm glad. I was wondering. I know you didn't email ahead of time, but it's cool that you went. So, well, let's actually start with that then, William, and tell us what happened before and after Raw, if there was anything we didn't catch because of split screen breaks tonight. We missed very little, maybe not none of them. I don't know if we missed any in-ring action tonight because of split screen breaks, but as far as what happened before and after, fill us in if you saw that.
Oh yeah, that's cool about the split screen, because I was actually kind of wondering about that, because that first hour, it wasn't until like the AJ Styles entrance that I noticed that the pacing was just going like that. Like, we got, you know, we started with the Bobby Lashley thing with Theory, and then we moved straight to the Rey Mysterio match, and then it was like that match. You usually can tell with WWE matches when, you know, there's like a commercial break where they kind of slow things down, but that match just seemed to like keep going, and it wasn't until like the Styles thing I was like, oh wow, we're actually slowing down. This is like the first time I've noticed that we're actually having like a hard like commercial break cut. But before the show started, we had two main event matches. I'm going to spoil things for people there. But we had T-Var versus Cedric Alexander. Cedric Alexander won that one. And then the second match was Veer Mahan versus Mustafa Ali. And Veer won that one after putting Mustafa in his finisher submission, and Ali passed out. And the only thing that happened after the show, which is why I was like able to get out of there pretty quickly, after the show ended, Becky just got on the mic, and I don't know if you saw it last week or other people saw it last week, but they put a promo up on social media after the show where she cut kind of a, I don't want to say like a super babyface promo, but it was more akin to like the stuff she used to do when she was the Man, where, you know, kind of cocky, but not like super heelish or anything. Tonight it was kind of similar to that, where she, you know, after she beat Asuka, she got on the mic and she was still being a little heelish, talking about how this was the start of her huge comeback story, and how she was going to be the GOAT. And when she said she was the GOAT, she made like a bad GOAT sound. But there was like one hint of like babyfaceness in her promo when she said that, you know, Asuka had been a thorn in her side, but you know, maybe one day she'll thank her for, I'm kind of paraphrasing because I forget her exact wording, but basically she says someday she'll thank her for like putting her on this beginning of her comeback. So a hint of respect there, I think, from Becky at the end there.
Cool. I'm curious, and this is kind of a weird question, then I'll throw to Tom and Javier for questions for you after this. Did Kevin Patrick get a pop when they announced that he was permanently replacing Jimmy Smith as the play-by-play man? And by the way, that's not official yet, but, I mean, come on. Jimmy Smith took a week off. You know Vince is done with him.
Oh.
But he was only announced as on vacation, but I'm just saying, you know, I'm stirring trouble a little bit here. But we'll get into our thoughts on Patrick's announcement. Go ahead.
That was going to be one of my other questions, because, you know, I was only looking at the commentary table from a distance, and I was wondering, was Kevin Patrick on commentary, or did Kevin Smith forget his name? You just said it, Jimmy Smith. Get a wig. Yeah, it was from a distance, but he didn't get like an official entrance or a big, you know, any fanfare about him being a commentary tonight. I only saw Corey Graves and Kevin Patrick and Byron Saxon kind of make their way quietly as they were, doing the main event intro thing video, you know, the music and everything kind of make their way to his desk in the dark.
Because I would have thought Kevin might get a big pop. Like, people might be excited if he said he was hosting Raw, because I think people like Kevin Patrick. And that's not a dig at Jimmy Smith and how people feel about him. Just, it's like, hey, we like that guy. Cool. Although it doesn't really affect the live audience. Javier, I'll throw you first. Any questions about the in-person experience for William?
What was the reaction to Theory like? Was it legit heat, like, we don't like this guy, or was it like, we don't want to see it?
Man, it's really hard to tell, because for me, I'm hoping that it's we don't like you in a good baby face, not baby, in a good heel kind of way, where, you know, it's entertaining, like it's fun to boo him. So I'm kind of hoping that it's that. But I do get the sense that there's a lot of people that just plainly don't want to see him. But I wouldn't know exactly how that breaks off. I just know that he did get a lot of boos. He probably got the most boos out of the entire show. He was probably the most hated person there.
And over?
Was he over? Over in a heel way, I would say. Like, boos from everyone.
Tom, what have you got for William?
Let's stick with the same segment, because Lashley, in my opinion, has been booked pretty well lately, and it seems to be translating very nicely to his reactions. He seems to consistently be getting a really enthusiastic reaction from the crowd. He has never been a natural promo, and that's a lot of what we got from him tonight, but the reaction still seems to be there. At least that's what I saw on TV. What was your experience with that in being there live?
Yeah, I would say he was probably from, you know, the baby faces, he was probably the second person with the loudest cheers, the biggest reactions. Second only, of course, to Rey Mysterio, who's like the Pope here in San Diego, or Santa Claus. I don't know. He's like a local legend here. But aside from Rey, Bobby Lashley, I would say Bobby was the second most over person.
I have a question. How did what was it like being in the arena, and how did the crowd react to Otis puking hot dog bits? And did you have any angle on how they pulled that off? I am hoping that it wasn't like Otis just holding in too many hot dogs and really puking, but I'm not ruling anything out.
Oh, man, I actually missed that one. I missed, like, how it happened, and I missed him actually vomiting. It was kind of like a magician's trick, because like a magic trick, because Bobby Lashley and the Street Profits were like celebrating on the ramp, and they kind of went to like the left side of the stage to like celebrate with the people over there. So they were like really like getting a lot of eyes on themselves, like getting a lot of you know, grabbing a lot of attention from a lot of the audience. So that's where my eyes were directed at that moment. And I did make a mental note, like, because they set it up perfectly. They had the whole hot dog eating contest segment, and, you know, Otis talking about how he wasn't feeling good, and, of course, they had the match, and he took, like, two finishers to the gut, so, of course, he was going to vomit, but I made a mental note to, like, look out for that, but, you know, when it came to that moment, I wasn't looking there. And I think, I don't know how many people were looking, because I only caught it when they played the replay on the Tron, and I think a lot of people were like, "Oh, that's when most of the people reacted, was when they actually played it back on the Tron." So I think a lot of people also missed it live at that moment.
Javier, back to you.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting to have. I should have known, but I wasn't expecting to have to cover projectile vomiting today.
you know what, Javier? I'm always prepared for that. Covering WWE.
I'll hand it to them because I'm assuming that he drank something on the outside. I got to hand it to him for actually including a piece of a hot dog. That was a nice touch. And I love the camera zooming in on something. They're like, don't zoom in on that.
I loved after the commercial break that Byron Saxton seemed legitimately, and I totally buy it, still legitimately like nauseous from the whole thing.
Well, I mean, there's some people who have sympathy, you know, like they see and they want to go. And I'm like, man, that could have been a messy night at that arena. So, but yeah, whoever was like retching on the, because I was fine with it until like whoever was retching on the audio was like, oh man, you know, you might want to stop that.
So anyway, Javier, I interrupted you, I think.
No, that's pretty much what
anything
I had
else for William.
No.
Oh, okay. Tom, how about you?
Well, as for that ordeal, I don't know. I don't know if I prefer that to I don't know if I like that better or worse than when Titus did the same thing after a Thanksgiving eating contest, and it was into JBL's hat, so nothing actually was coming out, and you couldn't, you know, you just had to imagine it. But it still churns the stomach a bit. I think what got me was then commentary. The retching didn't help, but commentary talking about what it smelled like.
Oh yeah,
you know,
I know.
Kevin Patrick, like, oh yes, definitely hot dogs. Yes, yes. Anyway, you know, I'll ask a more general question because early in the show I mentioned that definitely due to the holiday, this felt more like just a bunch of matches, not as much consequence as we might want to expect from a typical Monday Night Raw. So how did the crowd energy, which again, toward the beginning, seemed to be quite passionate, how did it sustain throughout the night, did you feel?
I think that third hour was when we finally like died down a little. But yeah, I think most people here were just kind of like, you know, happy to be here, going with the flow, cheering the baby faces, booing the bad guys for the most part. Logan Paul was like the only person that they tried to pass off as the baby faces got like a very audible boo from the people there. But yeah, for the most part, this was like a very casual, I don't know, I guess WWE would love us if we were the same crowd from like going to place to place, because I think we reacted exactly how they wanted us to for the matches. And I think it helped that, you know, most of the people in the matches, even though there wasn't like a lot of stakes for them, the people who were in the matches were over. Like I mentioned that Rey Mysterio match, you know, Rey is super over. So people were just happy to see him have a match and do the 619 and do the Eddie spot and everything. Liv and Bianca are pretty over. So even if the tag was it was a bit of a bathroom break for me personally. I think people, you know, were excited to see Bianca and Liv there. And they were, you know, they stuck with the match. But yeah, like I mentioned, that last hour is, I think, when finally we're running a little bit out of energy. So even when R-Truth was trying to get the USA chant started, you know, California is known for being like a pretty blue state. But San Diego is like, it's blue in its own right, but there's like a lot of, you know, military people here, a lot of, I think it's more patriotic or a little bit more red, I guess, in the spectrum of things, in the political spectrum than some other places here in SoCal, especially. But even as Archer was trying to get that USA chant started, dressed up as Uncle Sam, I think it wasn't like really taking, and I don't think people were really into the whole Uncle Sam versus Gunther thing, you know, trying to get us to boo against the evil foreigner or whatever. And I think it took us, even when Becky came out and she like pulled out the table and everything, I expect that people would go crazy because, you know, you saw it at the end, people chanting, "We want tables," like crazy. But even though that's literally what she did, like the first thing coming out, like she pulled out the table, people were kind of like, you know, kind of like just sitting on their hands a little.
You talked about the pace of the show and the fact that, like, during the matches, you couldn't really tell when there was obvious downtime. They certainly did a fair amount of content that was video packages for Money in the Bank. And I assume that all played on the big screen. That's been my experience at TV events for WWE. So it's not like you're left out, but it felt a heavier dose than usual, including that long, roughly 4 minute Lesnar Reigns package and maybe it was the Money in the Bank recap that was 4 minutes. Well, both were pretty long. Did it seem excessive to you, or were people kind of interested just because of the content and how WWE does such a good job with the videos?
I think people were interested and engaged with them. That Lesnar one that you mentioned, I think, played in the last hour, in the third hour. And yeah, I think that one was where people were like kind of down At that point, like the energy level was pretty down. I expected there to be some kind of reaction for like, because you know, even if people only appear on the screen, people will react, even if it's like a promo or a video package for something for someone who's they know it's not there. Sometimes they'll react. So I was kind of like just from a personal curiosity, wanting to know how they would react to Lesnar or to Reigns, Lesnar especially, because I personally I'm just kind of, you know, tired of the Lesnar Reigns saga, and it just feels so been there, done that, that I was, you know, hoping to get some insight into how other people would react to it. But they were just like pretty quiet for it and barely any reaction for it. The rest of the other video packages, I don't think killed much of the interest or engagement from the people.
Was there a discernible reaction to Lesnar in any way that matches your, I mean, because we've seen some signs with live crowds of Lesnar not being over. I mean, he was mega over for SmackDown in Minneapolis when he came out as a surprise, because A, people love surprises, and B, this is sort of this is his home market, or he went to the university and is not based out of anymore, but certainly is Minnesota's own in so many ways. But since then, it does seem like you said there's sort of a apathy towards it. Did that come across at all in any reaction to him, or is it hard to tell?
Yeah, it's hard to tell just because, you know, like I mentioned, it was during that third hour, so I don't know if I can attribute to apathy or just the lack of energy at that specific point in the show.
William, is there anything else you want to bring up from the live experience, or just sort of in your normal format, any topics you want us to address or questions yet?
From the live experience, no. I think we pretty much covered anything. You know, usually the one thing I'll bring up, usually I try to, I like to, you know, keep my eye out on what kind of merch people are wearing. I feel like tonight it is from the shows I've been to, I don't know, since the pandemic started or whatever. This is the one where I saw the least amount of people wearing any WWE merchandise. I feel like most people were wearing just, you know, regular civilian clothes, I guess. And I didn't really get the sense that there was like any one person who was like the top seller, aside from maybe like Steve Austin, I guess. Those San Diego 316 shirts sell like hotcakes. But yeah, moving on to a couple questions I had. During that AJ Styles and The Miz match, I was pretty excited when Ciampa attacked AJ at the end. I thought we were going to move on to a one-on-one rivalry between the two of them, but then The Miz also joined in and attacked AJ, and they both of them ganged up on them. It seems to me that we're going to move on to a tag team rivalry with Ciampa and Miz against AJ and Logan Paul, I guess, at SummerSlam. Is that what you guys read from that segment?
That was definitely my reading, too. Tom, is this making up for how Tommaso Ciampa's been underutilized or not pushed, at least, on the main roster? Is anything near the level he was in NXT? Do you like this or not?
I mean, I don't love it for Ciampa. I think being involved in the storyline, since this appears to be something where he would actually be involved in the storyline rather than, you know, just showing up to attack somebody and then disappearing like he has been for weeks, is at least an upgrade from what he's been doing. But I, you know, they could do a tag match, of course, depending on what else they do or don't have for AJ, or what their confidence level is in Logan Paul carrying his half of a one-on-one match. But my feeling was that Miz has been painted as not a threat, so aligning Ciampa with him was stacking the deck against Logan. You know, we'll see how it plays out as we always do. But I'm still not certain that this means AJ will be included in the storyline moving forward and that it will be a tag match.
Javier, how do you feel?
Yeah, I do think it's going to be a tag match because you also need to do something to try to get Logan over as a babyface. And pairing him with someone like AJ Styles would be a good way to do it, or at least a good attempt.
That's the only, like, it was just, again, we heard boos when they showed Logan Paul. Like, this is going to be, and I think the momentum is there. You know, I think the Bellwether fans, the influencers, whatever you want to call them, are going to set the tone. I don't think there's going to be a big rally from the Logan Paul fan base at live events. The cool thing to do is going to be to boo him. And if people think that's going to bother him, it's just going to amplify it and add to it for sure. And yeah, I mean, it seems like that's where they're going. And I think too, if you put Logan Paul was good in the ring, but I don't know you want to do a long high pressure singles match yet. And obviously adding Ciampa and Styles just elevates the match quality. And in a sense, the better the match is, the more the fans might be into the action and get distracted from trying to get under the skin of Logan Paul. So there could be a variety of strategies here. And maybe they just look at their depth chart and go, you know, Ciampa's been a good sport. He's a pro. He's got years left if, you know, even with his body beat up of being able to be a contributor, let's mix him in a little bit here and see if fans take to him and how he performs. I also kind of assume that it's a way to extend the Miz Logan feud because Ciampa will be the one likely doing the job in that match. And so, you know, there's no shame in that role. It's not the role he probably would have picked, but, you know, he's getting paid well and it's a spot a lot of people would like to have. Javier, do you want to say anything more on that, or should I throw it back to Wayne?
Well, I mean, and particularly, AJ Styles seems like the type of guy who says, I want to wrestle this guy. So
that's true. Yeah, I could see that. So, yeah, go ahead, Wayne.
Question, one of my top questions, since I didn't get to, like, watch it on TV and listen to the broadcast team, you brought Kevin Patrick being on the commentary table. How did he do?
Good question. I thought he did well. It is not heavy lifting. They've practiced with the previous two color commentators, Jimmy Smith and, oh, how quickly we forget his name, Adnan Virk. It's been a while since I got to screw up his last name. They got a lot. Corey Graves has a lot of practice carrying the show, and Graves did the intro. And obviously, it's just like sometimes you forget Kevin's there, but I thought Kevin did good. I thought he was fit in really well. I think there were like two times, one where Corey Graves gave him a hard time and one where I think just it was early on. I think his cadence on something was a little bit off and maybe that was just being communicated through the headset or nerves or something, but no big deal. But he's likable and knows the product and I think fit right in. That was my take. And I joked in my report at pwtorch.com as soon as Graves announced that Jimmy Smith had the gall to take a vacation day when Michael Cole never has. And, you know, the joke was Tony Schiavone never took a week off during Nitro because, you know, the joke is, you know, you take a week off and the substitute does better and then you're in trouble. So I just said, I hope Jimmy Smith is dusting off his resume. But that would look really bad if they did that. Tom, what'd you think of the job Kevin Patrick did?
I think he did well in the sense that I felt he blended right in. You know, he was the least noticeable of the three, but he also, when I did notice him, he was rolling with the punches that Graves and Saxton are just so accustomed to slinging at each other and setting up for one another. That's one of the things Byron excels at, is setting himself up for the punches. The weird thing to me, though, was, and I know he has a broadcast background, but the weird thing to me was like, well, what about the people who are more tenured, like Vic Joseph or Andy Shepherd or Nigel McGuinness? And I would love to, just because I cover Level Up, I would love to throw Sudhu Shah's name in there, but he's doing well, but, you know, still very, very new. But yeah, it just seemed odd that he got the nod. But yeah, no, he did perfectly fine.
And Javier, what'd you think?
I thought the first hour was pretty rough. I felt like his cadence was a little bit he was emphasizing like weird words, almost like reminded me of William Shatner on how he, you know, like put emphasis on the wrong word sometimes.
Yeah.
And there were times where it seemed like he just felt like he had to get something in that kind of felt like, you know, out of the normal flow of commentary. But by about halfway into the show, he basically, you know, it felt like he got more into the flow. So I thought he was fine the second half of the show.
Very good. William, anything else for us?
Yeah. I mentioned that Veer was on Main Event, and, you know, I don't think that's like a certain death nail or anything. But he was also in that hot dog eating or 4th of July party segment thing, just kind of sitting there in the background eating a plate or something. And, you know, Mustafa Ali came in, or Cedric Alexander, someone came in and they stole his plate, and he like comically ran off chasing them.
Yep.
It feels like he's just a few steps removed from, you know, being in some of those segments chasing the 24/7 title around. Have they just completely giving up on him, or I don't know.
Yeah, the tone of Veer being in a, you know, kind of a comedic skit where his food is stolen. I mean, I don't want to make a big deal out of it, but I do think that's not a spot that you would put just instinctively, if you're Vince McMahon or the writers. You wouldn't put somebody who you're really protecting and trying to convey as a badass heel, you wouldn't put him in that spot. So I don't think it's overt burial, but I think it's a bit of a tell or a reveal about where they feel he is going to be. Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, maybe just because the only person who was treated seriously in these skits was Omos. Everyone else was a buffoon, but it is because everyone else was a buffoon, and that is very standard across the roster for these kinds of things. It's not raising too many of my red flags, but you know, you of course may be onto something. But yeah, I mean, just the concerns overall continue with Veer. You know, I said on Bonus Point recently that you look at, it's just such an odd difference between the trajectories of Veer, who made it to the main roster, and his former tag team partner, Sangha is the name he's going by now, who was persona non grata for a little while there, and now has come back and is doing really well for himself in NXT for, you know, for as much as he gets featured, which isn't a whole lot so far, but he's doing well with the spots. And the dude's about to be in a really big Bollywood movie that's coming out later this year. He's not the star of it or anything, but he's in it. And then internationally, it's being distributed by Walt Disney Pictures. So who also made the movie about Veer's real life back before he was in wrestling. So there's that. But yeah, just it seems like opposite trajectories here for the two former tag team partners.
William, anything else for us before we move on?
Yeah, my last question. Everyone was pretty excited when they announced the no holds barred match between Asuka and Becky, but I was kind of disappointed when I looked at the clock and there were only like 15 or 16 minutes to go. And, you know, Asuka was only just making her entrance. So it seemed pretty rushed. I don't know what you guys think of that, the main event match. Other than that, I'll let you guys go. Thanks.
All right, great. Thanks,
off.
William. Yep. You bet. Javier, your thoughts.
Yeah, I thought it was a fine match. That's pretty much it. I was actually more impressed by the earlier match with Lashley and the Street Profits, because this other one it just felt kind of like they were just moving from one spot to another. Maybe it was a time issue, because it kind of felt like it was just, you know, let's get this thing in, and then it was that whole time with Becky struggling to get that chair up in the corner that just went on for way too long. And then it fell, and then they had to do it again. I think it was a little bit like rough for what it was, and I'm also kind of like recently comparing it to some of the stuff in Impact and AEW, which probably isn't fair, but and Money in the Bank, But yeah, I thought it was some parts of it was rough for me. But other than that, it was a pretty good match.
And Tom, your thoughts?
Yeah, I confess I also looked at the clock and thought, really? They've main evented against one another so often lately, and this is all they're going to get. But for what they had, I ended up feeling like depending on the direction they're going with Bianca, if they wanted to do something with Bianca at SummerSlam that did not involve Becky, they could have stretched this out, just theoretically, they could have stretched this out even further. And despite the number of times that we've seen Asuka and Becky clash, I think they did well enough here that if given another month, they could have really honed and built up to what could have been a really good personal feud stipulation match on the big stage of SummerSlam. So I agree with William and Javier's thoughts on this, but I think I liked it a bit better because I feel like with some more drama added to it, it could have been premium live event worthy.
All right, very good. The phone lines are still open, so if you're joining us midstream here, you're welcome to call 347-215-8558. Some of you might be getting back from watching fireworks, and we certainly welcome your participation in the show. But let's go next to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, we circled back to talking about the women's division. That's often what you bring up. But first of all, happy 4th, and what stood out on Raw for you?
Yeah, happy 4th. I'm just going to talk to women only because they only definitely did it. It just me and the entire show. I don't know where to start, really, honestly. I think I'll start with Liv. Now, with me, I like Liv. I'm a fan of Liv in terms of, okay, so I like Liv, but I love Becky. Is that type of thing with me where how I compare Liv? It's like, I like her. I'm glad that she got opportunity being Miss Money in the Bank. And by the way, I didn't expect her to cash in at all the same night like they always like to do, which they kind of need to stop doing with the women, have to cash in the same night, which is so have them hold. I really was expecting Liv to hold on to the briefcase for a while. I wasn't expecting her to cash in at all. Especially not to Ronda of all people. I really thought it would be to Bianca, so they got me on Saturday when he did that. And then when she won, I was like, whoa, okay. So, and I will say that this is going to be a short reign. Don't have anyone to be too comfortable with her being a champion, because when it hits SummerSlam, she's losing to Charlotte or Bayley whenever they come back, which that's not really fair to say. Let's give Liv a chance. I mean, that's, you know, and it's to the point like they're already giving up on Liv without even giving her a chance to be champion. People are into her in the live crowd. I know people who do podcasts are just saying that she's going to be a champion. Let's give her a chance. She just became champion. We don't know how she's going to be a champion. So I know her promos isn't, you know, all that great right now because she hasn't had a chance to talk in general. So, but you know, I would say so. Give up Liv already when she just became champion. So what do you think about this whole dynamic, how they would treat Liv as champion?
Tom, I'll throw to you first on that.
It's a big question. I'll make the Nikki Cross comparison again, because this definitely feels like a situation where they'll want to go to a rematch. Byron even used the phrase tonight on commentary that what Liv is trying to do in the ring right now is, let's see, I wrote it down. Where is it? He said she's trying to earn the right to keep the championship, which I thought was good phrasing of what her championship mission is right now. But she's staring down the barrel of the, you know, biggest threat in the WWE main roster women's division across both brands in Ronda Rousey. So it would be very easy,
and I guess also
to
too,
see
also
like.
By this way too, mm-hmm. is, I'm sorry. The other thing I was also thinking too is that if she loses the championship early, I'll be thinking to myself that why do you have her win the briefcase and win the championship just for her to lose the championship weeks after at SummerSlam? You know, just before the battle. I think I thought about it as well. So yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. I think what Javier said earlier is something I was also thinking, is that it's something that you can always reference back to with Liv. That even if it's something that's in the past, it's one more thing that they can say about her. She's a former Miss Money in the Bank, former women's champion, no matter how long that lasted, if they need to or if they want to feature her again. So I think that may be enough to explain that. But I feel like they are in a position – and maybe there's something that I don't know about the Charlotte situation that precludes this from being the case, but I feel like they're in a situation where Liv could look good by surviving Ronda for a while and then be saved by Charlotte attacking Ronda, and then Liv gets more of a shot at a title reign, assuming she continues to do well, which, again, I feel like she has been all year so far, which and she's just been someone that I've criticized throughout her career. So it's nice to be able to pay her compliments now, which I've been doing all year long.
Very good. Kyle, back to you.
Yeah, and so, you know, watching the main event between Becky and Asuka really made me really make me think of why was Bianca ever as champion. She's never really in the main event. They have been having Becky and Asuka in the main event every single week. They only care, they care a lot about Becky, a lot in the main event besides Bianca. And she gets babyface reactions when the overwhelming that made the big was Liv and Becky to win the briefcase. And it's like, when it comes to Bianca, she's just been, in some ways, it's not her fault, but she's just been a complete afterthought as champion because no one really cares much about her. Her what she says is, as a heel, is saying she's EST of this, EST of that. I think people are in the building are starting to sense that. Say that, why are we cheering this woman? She keeps calling herself the EST of this. I heard someone else talking about this in a different podcast as well. Is that people are starting to turn on Bianca, and Becky still. They still didn't change her music. They didn't change anything about her. They still treated her like she still acted like the man. If WWE really wanted people to boo Becky Lynch, they would have changed her music, changed everything about Becky, but they haven't. So what do you think about the dynamic of how Becky and Bianca are being treated? Because it's very different, and people are really behind Becky. You don't really care much about Bianca. So what do you think about that? Those situations, right? And that's
So Javier, do you agree with the premise, and what do you have to say to what Kyle said otherwise?
Well, I think if Rhea Ripley hadn't gotten injured, that would have been your main event. While they built up the story of Asuka and Becky underneath, but with Rhea Ripley being out, that, you know, when you replace it with Carmella, she seems like she's just basically, you know, floundering without any real direction because, you know, her main opponent is gone. And, you know, in terms of what was the other part of that?
Kyle, go ahead with the other part. Sorry.
Saying that compared to Becky and Bianca, how very different compared to how Becky is, she's getting massive cheers and people really like her, but Bianca is a heel character, but people are not really are behind her that much for the last few weeks because she hasn't done anything interesting. So just comparing those
when it's that, you know, I hate to speak bad of Carmella, but when Carmella is your opponent, you're not going to be doing too much in stuff that's interesting. Particularly since, you know, Carmella's not going to beat her. So there's no drama there. I'm in the, I don't know if I'm in the minority or not, but I actually really prefer Becky as this version of heel Becky, where she's like just, you know, barely holding it together and desperate. It's a lot, you know, there's a lot more character to this than, I mean, she was cool as the man, but as big time Bex, there's a lot more character there and a lot
big
more
time.
For her to. Yeah, so there's more for her to sink her teeth into. So and you can tell she's having like a lot of fun with this. Ultimately, you know, and Belair's better is better when she's on the chase. I mean, but you know, the good news is that ultimately we're going to have Becky face off against Bianca, and that's probably the best matchup that right now the women can have in the current landscape.
Tom, over to you.
Yeah, I honestly, no further comment. I agree with all of that. I echo it, and it's been one of the rewarding things about going back to see Becky's debut 8 years ago, which is one of the main things that I was actually looking forward to covering when we started this retrospective, because I remember it not getting off to a great foot. But looking back at it, we can criticize the framing from creative, but Becky's performance is so enthusiastic, and it actually, like, looking back now with the benefit of hindsight, I can see more than glimpses. Like, you can see the performer that we're seeing on Raw every week now in that primordial version of the Becky Lynch character, which has been really neat.
Awesome. All right, Kyle, back to you for another topic if you choose.
Yeah, well, if I will close out with this little part with Becky and Bianca, with me, I've always been a Becky fan. She's always been really interesting and good because of just the way she's been presented, especially even lately throughout, ever since she became the man, and now this Big Time Beck stuff she's doing. She knows her character, and I don't think Bianca doesn't know what her character is yet. I think that's the other thing, too. And so that's the other problem that Bianca really struggles, I feel. And so, yeah, but we'll see what happens. I'm kind of expecting Becky to win back the title, honestly, from Bianca, because she hasn't done anything for me as champion, honestly, like, for a long time at this point. But moving on now to Bobby Lashley and Theory, I was surprised that they had Theory win the briefcase. I was like, I actually didn't like that because it made no sense. It just kind of reminded me a little bit what he did. They just brought in Brock Lesnar, just come in to win the briefcase. That's kind of what it reminded me of, what he did on Saturday. And have him just win the briefcase where he didn't qualify. He wasn't even part of the, you know, stare down they did on Friday. And then the Oprah people who thought it was going to win was Rollins, and yeah, case for Sammy or even Drew, but mainly Rollins and Sammy Rollins was both really my pick to win. And then they did this. It's just, I don't know. I'm kind of torn because I don't hate Theory. I think Theory's a cool wrestler. He's going to the mic. Everything about Theory is great as a heel and how he's been presented. But you look at Seth Rollins and what a terrible year he has been having since the beginning of the year, getting kind of screwed over in world championship matches and just not really been the vocal point anymore than what they thought that it was going to be. He was doing some good stuff near the end of last year where he is now. And then they just said, we're just going to get Theory to have this briefcase because this man wants him to be, which is fine. Again, I don't hate it, but it's just, I think it's too soon for him to be in this position right now. But what do you think about what they did on Sunday and or Saturday with Theory and all that?
No, I'm glad you brought that up, Kyle. I mean, Theory is a prominent central figure in WWE right now. Money in the Bank, you know, part of two major matches. Lashley, when he came out, you know, said, has it crossed your mind that someone gifted you a spot in Money in the Bank because your ego was shattered into a million pieces earlier? That was about all they did to address what feels, you know, quite unfair to the others who qualified for the match. And I'm curious, Tom, do you think enough was done to address that on the part of, you know, the ostensibly the sane voices, Bobby Lashley himself, Kevin Patrick or the, you know, Byron Saxton? Did they do enough to acknowledge what is sort of an outrageous decision by management?
Yeah, I suppose not. In every other way, I'm going to be in favor of the situation. It's another briefcase win where I can only half pat myself on the back, because looking at the men's field, I thought, I'll bet this is going to be one of those years where the person who wins isn't announced for the match before it takes place. But I did not have a guess as to whom that was going to be. But yeah, I'm absolutely in favor of Theory holding it, even though I didn't think it was going to happen, but I wanted Sami Zayn to win it because I thought that that would be a really interesting storyline where maybe Reigns now sees, like, oh, I guess I should bring this guy in you know, rather than just, you know, doing what I've been doing. Maybe I should bring him in, and then you'd get the possibly interesting dynamic. I mean, Sammy can sell anything, of the person holding the briefcase actually being in the employ of the champion. And every time Reigns is down, you've got Sammy on the outside, and maybe Reigns has been mistreating him and people are starting to sympathize, even though he's still a heel, and we're willing him to just cash in, but he won't until he does. I think that's a really cool storyline that Sammy would be able to pull off. But
yeah.
yeah.
I am mourning.
But I guess you are right that I didn't feel that element of, you know, really trying to put over why we should be upset that Austin Theory holds the briefcase. Seems to be a missing ingredient on the show. I'm sure it was paid lip service. You quoted Lashley. I just didn't pick up on it as much.
And I don't think they want us thinking about that. I think they decide, you know, Vince McMahon's like, I want Theory to win, but I want people thinking about how it made a mockery out of weeks of speculation and analysis. And it's like, you know, if six candidates are announced for MVP of the NBA or NFL, and it's like for weeks fans speculate on who deserves it. And then they go, oh, yeah, we forgot the seventh guy. He's the winner. It's like, well, we just spent weeks trying to figure this out, or, you know, the old, it gets referred to a lot, but, you know, introducing the murderer in a murder mystery in the last chapter, and they introduced the winner of the Money in the Bank without, you know, any kind of storyline justification. But I don't think they want us thinking about that. I think they want the heat to be on Theory, not because of the decision ostensibly supposedly McMahon made, but instead just focus on Theory being the youngest Money in the Bank winner who now has this power. And I think they're intentionally kind of moving us past it. And that's why I think just a little bit of lip service was paid to Lashley. Javier, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I don't think they can logically push the fact that, you know, he shouldn't have been in the match outside of, you know, grumbling from the actual people who were in the match, because he had to win the match. Now, if you're analyzing it, the moment he gets put in the match, you know, I'm pretty sure everybody said, oh, they're putting Theory in this, he's probably going to win. You know, so that if you're, you know, so they, if they keep hammering that point home that, you know, he shouldn't have been in it, you're reinforcing that it was a booking decision,
right,
and not something that happened, because he still had to defeat the other seven wrestlers in the match. So, you know, just by saying, you know, so Bobby Lash somebody that was in the match complaining and saying that, oh, he shouldn't have been on there, it's fine. But when management's complaining about it, then, or your commentators are complaining about it, you know, too heavily, I think it draws too much attention to that. Was there anything else there?
Just, I guess, your thoughts on giving Theory the Money in the Bank, besides the way they got it to him. How did they handle it tonight, and what do you think of that decision, booking?
Well, I mean, it's he has a year to cash it in, and that puts it I know they're teasing the whole SummerSlam thing, but that puts it until after next year's WrestleMania. So who knows what the landscape is going to be then. I would not be surprised if a year from now he's actually champion of one of two brands.
Yeah. Tom, your thoughts on that?
Oh yeah, I I'm in favor of him holding it, and I'm in favor of what they're doing with promoting Lesnar and Reigns. I definitely thought it was over with, but just the fact that they are promoting it as the final match using verbiage that was still on the table for that, you know, it is the biggest match that they can put on in the company right now with regular performers, and if you take my definition of regular performers, people who aren't The Rock is basically what I mean by that. and you know, it showed me like, oh, I was wrong. There is still money on the table with these guys. Okay. Well, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are tired of them, but I think I agree with this being the SummerSlam main event. And the fact that they are really hard selling, you could see a cash in here, which is part of the reason why I walked away after the Natty Rousey match. I was like, man, they're pushing future cash in so much that, you know, Liv's not going to cash in on Reigns, but I don't think one's happening tonight. So they gave me a false. Yeah.
And I would be surprised if Liv winning, Tom, wasn't not as much an endorsement of Liv, but setting the stage for trying to create more suspense for Theory and Lesnar and Reigns, or at least that's a side benefit that I think they probably saw as a contributing factor to go with that audible, to have her win Money in the Bank and cash in against Ronda to set up a rematch. Part of it is, hey, this is going to plant the seed when Theory wins, that he could also do that at SummerSlam. That is, that's going to put in the fans' minds in a fresh way, you just don't know. And tune in. You don't want to not be there live for that history on Peacock.
Exactly. I do agree with that. And, you know, I am constantly on this program, you know, stepping into fantasy booking scenarios. But when I look at Theory holding the briefcase, what I foresee is Cody Rhodes finally winning the championship at some point in over the next year. And then they do some version. It's like the Money in the Bank version of the Dusty finish, where Cody gets a celebration, but then Theory walks out with the title.
What just happened in Impact with recently happened in Impact with Josh Alexander, that he won the title and then Moose had the their version of Money in the Bank and cashed it in and won it from him. I was thinking the exact same thing, Tom. Had you not brought it up, I would have.
The what was I just gonna say? It slipped away. Oh well. Anyway, Kyle, back to you for any closing comments.
Yeah. So, the last thing I'll talk about is Liv one more time. Is that again? I really hope they will give her at least a lengthy title run and don't shoehorn Charlotte or Waters to win the championship at SummerSlam, because that's what I am hearing other people have been saying, that this is going to be a short reign. I hope not. So this is what they need to really, if you want to make Liv your top woman on SmackDown, do it right and don't have it be a short title run. But I'll leave you with that. It's your call.
All right. Thanks, Kyle. Good to hear from you. All right. We'll move next to Ryan in Cumberland. Ryan, thanks for holding. Thanks for calling. Happy 4th. What stood out on Raw for you? What are your topics?
My first question is on Edge. Do you think he's going to get a strong booing reaction when he returns? Because I think these fans are going to think it's Bray Wyatt that's returning, but it's pretty clear it's Edge because of the gold medal and the Dudley Boy glasses and Hardy Boy gear in the video. So I'm wondering what your thoughts on what kind of reaction Edge is going to get.
Javier, what have you decoded from the clues in the video, and what do you think the end result is going to be, as Ryan brings up?
Yeah, it's Edge, because, I mean, there's I think there's a Latino Heat license plate, I think. It's got to be Edge. It's the only thing that makes sense, unless we're talking about somebody else from that era coming in. How fans are going to react, I do not know, because you've had this really weird last run that he was on. You know, maybe they'll forgive it and he'll come back and as a babyface and people will cheer him. We'll see. I have no idea what his reaction is going to be, but I'm 90% sure that's a Edge promo.
And Tom, how about you?
Yeah, the other content, the general content of the video echoes his earlier days, both in the Brood and pre-Brood, where they had little teaser videos of Edge just sort of like wearing a leather jacket in an alley. If I remember correctly, he has gone on to say, like, yeah, I didn't know who my character was at that point. They just told me to stand in the alley and, like, scream at the camera and stuff. So it does evoke those a bit. Of course, everyone is forgiven, and I even raised an eyebrow thinking that I feel like I've deliberately taken my finger off of the pulse in that regard, but I feel like most people that I have heard from have agreed, like, oh yeah, this is absolutely Edge. But anybody thinking Bray would be forgiven, not just because it's creepy, but because it's edited the exact same way that Bray's old videos were always edited, even when he was on NXT. This was the editing style. As far as Ryan's question, I have a hard time thinking that Edge will be booed, even despite the little heel run there, because the Judgment Day has retained that entrance music. So one would imagine that Edge is going back to his, I never know whether it's on the stage or on this day or what, you know, whatever that music is. And when that hits and he runs out and he works the crowd again, the way that he is just so incredible at doing, I have a hard time believing that he'll be booed. People didn't even want to boo him during the heel run.
Yeah. All right, Ryan, back to you.
My second question is on Gunther and Bobby Lashley. How long do you think before we see a unification match between those two competitors? Because tonight I think it was driven home that we're going to see a showdown between those two sooner or later based on the patriotic gimmick Bobby Lashley does, you know, serving in the military and Gunther bashing the USA.
Tom, what do you think?
Well, how about Survivor Series when, you know, insert the verbiage here. I think if they hold it to Survivor Series, which seems believable, I think that is, a flagship match that could happen on that show. And even though this isn't going to happen, I will circle back to theory quickly and just say that even though we know it's not going to happen, I mean, we're pretty sure it's not going to. It seems unrealistic. I really liked how he laid out the idea of, I'm going to walk out of SummerSlam as the first ever, like, United States Universal WWE champion who cashed in Money in the Bank, and I'll be the youngest to ever do it. It reminded me of Jericho going into whatever pay-per-view that was, and it's like, yeah, but he's not going to win both belts, and then he wins both belts, and you're like, wow, this is – what a coronation. This is incredible, and, you know, he gets so much mileage out of that. So not going to happen, but theory simply laying down that that is his mission going into SummerSlam I think is quite compelling.
Ryan, back to you. And what's your next topic?
Next topic is, I was very surprised to see Lex Luger getting a biography special on A&E. Do you think that opens up the door for him getting a WWE Hall of Fame induction?
Boy, that story is going to be interesting. What they choose to edit in and how they tell that story. Luger was just such a big deal from the late 80s into the 90s in so many different ways, and then things just took such a bad turn in so many ways afterwards. Javier, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit out of the loop of this study in following his life afterwards. But yeah, you know, it seems like he's in a good place now, from my understanding.
I just know I was at the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame banquet a few years ago, and he was supposed to get an award. And it was, you know, going to be kind of a redemptive moment. You know, this guy with a controversial background, not known for great attitude and good decisions and loving the business. And I'm like, well, let's see how he does here. And then he sent in a video accepting the award because he got a better offer to be somewhere else that same night.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, you know. So, people do what they got to do, but it wasn't a redemptive moment for him to participate in this, pretty serious, you know, amateur Olympic pro wrestling Hall of Fame ceremony based out of, you know, one of the capitals of amateur wrestling, Iowa. And to pull that, maybe there's more to the story than I know. I just want to put that asterisk there, but that was certainly what I was told from people involved in the organization at the time. But at least he got a video sent in. But it wasn't great. Yeah. Anyway, Tom, your thoughts on that?
I suppose it. I don't have a read on how WWE produced the A&E biographies are. I get the sense from the promos that, you know, WWE is deciding what story to tell. But just the fact that with their control being all over it, I think Ryan may be onto something, that this could be leading to a Hall of Fame induction and probably a prominent one, because as we say every year about the Hall of Fame classes, they are running out of main event level names to lead that show with.
Yeah. All right, Ryan, do you have another topic, or is that it?
Oh, I will say I'm still looking forward to Sid getting into the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yes. I just try to – I mean, I want a Sid roast. That's what I want. I want a roasting of Sid. All right, Ryan, happy 4th. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for taking the call.
You bet. Of course, as always. Okay, I want to get to email here and then throw to you guys for any closing comments. But JB from Detroit did email tonight. He goes, I'm a big fan of Gunther and Ludwig and their new act. However, I couldn't help but feel the reaction was very muted for them tonight from the crowd in San Diego. Perhaps it's because he wasn't advertised and hasn't been on Raw prior to my knowledge. So maybe the crowd just wasn't familiar with him. Regardless, I enjoy the act and hope he'll get over and continue to elevate the IC title, which has been on a lower level the last year or so. Secondly, how do you grade WWE not going overboard at the holiday angles tonight? Not going overboard. Overall, I thought they were relatively tame in the outdoor barbecue and the Uncle Sam bit with R-Truth. However, I could have done without Otis losing his lunch on TV. As always, love the show and go VIP. So we talked a bit about Gunther and the IC title and all that. So, I'll give you guys a chance to do that, and then we'll flip to the tying a ribbon around the 4th of July themed stuff. But first things first, Javier, what do you think of how the Gunther push is doing? And I mean, I was just like, is there even a roster split anymore? I mean, the flow back and forth. I mean, they tried to explain it a little bit, and at least they acknowledged he was, you know, paying a visit, and, you know, he's anti-American, so he's going to be there on July 4th. But how did he know, you know, and why was he booked or allowed? I don't know. I mean, I guess we're just not. I mean, I don't guess. I know we're not supposed to think about those things, but Javier, your thoughts on that?
My brother texted me, whatever happened to the brand split, and followed up with a picture of from Pirates of the Caribbean. The code is more what you call guidelines than actual rules.
Yes, exactly.
So, yeah, so so he did pick that out. Yeah, and I think that was even before Gunther showed up, too, that when Natalya showed up. So,
And Liv Morgan. I guess Liv is sort of more explained, but... it's just in the hype going in with Riddle over on SmackDown all the time. And yeah, there's just a pretty
all
decent
list
of people floating back and forth. And I mean, I'm sort of losing track of who's on which show because, you know, you just watch them on on both shows and you stop remembering what show they were on, you know, exclusively months back.
Yeah. And overall with the Gunther, they're doing better than I expected, not as good as they could have been had they just gone with Walter. The general Walter thing, not just the name. They're doing well. And what's the name that he's going by now? Kaiser.
Ludwig Kaiser.
Yeah, he does a great job. I think he almost has. Because Gunther losing losing weight on, and you know, he looks good and all that stuff, but it feels like he lost a little bit of presence to me. And, you know, I'm like, look, my eyes are drawn to Kaiser. I mean, like, this guy's like, you know, so he had that one match and I was really into it. I think it's good and they could really build this up into something. As a top heel for babyfaces to go after, fingers crossed that they don't drop the ball.
Tom,
more what you call guidelines or whatever the line is. I love that. I was muting to laugh when you mentioned that. I noticed the same thing that JB noticed about the reaction to Gunther tonight, but I've been pleased, not over the top, but I've been pleased with how he's been presented thus far. Would have liked Ricochet to get a better IC title run, but I thought, like, oh, it's finally his time, but alas. Gunther, as every single other person who's watched one of his matches will tell you, he is a special performer. There isn't really anyone else like him, and it just feels like they've got a hit on this guy, right? They can't miss on him, and so far, so good. And I will echo the praise for Ludwig Kaiser, whose name I also had to be reminded of. I don't know if I've mentioned this on a podcast before. It's purely anecdotal, but just because I'm not sure I mentioned it, living here in Orlando, you know, we see wrestlers around a lot. And so, you know, you just got to let them live their lives. And just like, oh, hey, and maybe mention it to whoever you're with and you know, but let them live their lives. This guy, I saw him before he was ever on TV, and I just, you know, I had to go up to him to say, like, hey, man, I've seen some of the stuff you've done. You're doing really well. Wish you the best of luck. And he seemed genuinely appreciative. I just coincidentally happened to see him out the day after he debuted on SmackDown, and I was like, well, I gotta. So I had to shout over to him and annoy him, just like, you know, hey, man, congrats. You earned it. And, you know, he was just like, oh, dude, thank you very much. Thank you. And then picked up his food and left. But, you know, I relay the anecdote just to say, like, most people who walk by, even if I'm a fan of them, it's like, okay, you know, let them live their life. And you know, I respect enough of what he was doing that I was like, I just got to let him know.
Tom, what'd you think of the 4th of July theme? Did they go too far from an opening video to R-Truth dressing up as Uncle Sam, of course, hot dog eating contest, which is, you know, one of the kind of grotesque traditions, and unfortunately, in the United States of America. I still can't believe news shows cover this like it's news, but and you know, the July 4th barbecue cookout and whatever else I'm forgetting. Was it just enough for the theme?
I admit I'm easily made queasy, but somehow managed to find competitive eating rather fascinating. Not something that I pay attention to unless somebody reminds me of the annual competition on July 4th. But when I am reminded of it, it's like, oh wow, I can't believe they can actually do that. The Uncle Sam thing was, you know, I mean, none of it really was for me. I think with all of this kind of stuff, mileage is going to vary. The cookout stuff got, I can't even remember specifically what, maybe it was the hot dog eating contest, but it, you know, got a couple of chuckles out of my family as they were in the room, but not really paying attention. The Uncle Sam stuff in particular was just like, yeah, I don't know about this one. And,
I think the crowd got a kick out of the Independence Day confusion.
And I was going to say, like, it's funny, but I think we've seen enough hits from R-Truth in that regard that this was on the lower end of that spectrum. He's been far funnier with the same style of humor. So overall, it's just par for the course for these kind of things. They always just have some sort of, oh, earlier in the day this happened and you know, nobody's getting along and it turns into a food fight or turns into an eating contest or something. But the opening package, I usually just sort of go like, oh, you know what, the holiday's not, I don't care too much about this particular holiday, but WWE always does a fine job putting together video packages, so I'm sure this one will be fine. But boy, from where I'm sitting, it just doesn't feel like a time to be excited about our country. And then the video package was very minimal compared to what WWE usually does, and most of it focused on the wrestlers, and sure, saying things like framing it around the holiday, like this is the EST of holidays, but then focusing on Bianca Belair and so on and so forth. So I felt like it at least for where I was coming into this particular holiday, the mindset that I was in regarding what's been going on in our country right now, I felt like the minimalist approach was more palatable for me. I doubt they had that in mind, but it worked for me.
Yeah, yeah. Javier, 4th of July, your thoughts on the theme?
I thought for the most part it was just right. I think the Uncle Sam stuff didn't really land as well as they thought. Also split my loyalties since I'm patriotic AF because a son of immigrants. So and you know, so but you know, here you have Truth acting like an idiot, and then you have this guy coming, you know, and I also respect the ring, which was Walter's you know, then Walter's gimmick was, you know, we respect the wrestling ring. So I was like, yeah, get this guy out of my ring. So my loyalties were split there. Yeah, overall, I think it was, you know, the holiday festivities did not overstay their welcome, I don't think. And it led into an interesting match between Seth Rollins and Ezekiel, too. So, you know, since those two are not currently feuding, seeing, you know, some mix-up in that is always nice because usually you just get the same people fighting each other over and over again until you hit the pay-per-view.
Yeah. I always like when a mishap of some condiment on clothing leads to an all-out fight in whatever format that takes during the holidays. The Ezekiel, by the way.
You sound like you lived it.
Let's just say there might be some repressed memories. the push of Ezekiel, you know, we've got a little break with whatever's going on with Kevin Owens from the storyline, but they keep talking, you know, Ezekiel sharing memories from the holidays with Elrod and Elias during the 4th of July deal. He seems like kind of a good, like, second-tier utility guy. He's you know, out, having lost the Elias getup, he seems to be improved in the ring. He seems more athletic. I think he's just more than passable against Seth, but he also should be losing. And he is, but I think with his gimmick, he can, you know, just kind of pick up, dust himself off, and go forward at the same spot. But I think he's, like, actually good enough for this role. I think it's good to have wrestlers who have a – it's not quite like, you know, when they had the occupational wrestlers back in the early 90s when they were trying to add a little personality to their jobbers. Ezekiel's higher than that for sure, but it's along the same lines of having somebody who can lose. It's almost like where Tommaso Ciampa was in a different way, just having a credible, you know, good enough wrestler who seems competitive but ultimately loses. And I don't have a problem with him being defined that way at this point. And I think he's – I don't, like, in any way, like, dread his matches. And I thought Seth got a decent match out of him. Javier, what do you think?
Yeah, he's in that sort of the same, like, area where Corbin is, you know, where they fill a spot, they fill a roster spot, and it doesn't make you immediately want to turn the channel. I do have to admit, I love how a throwaway comment by Kevin Owens has become this new character that we're probably going to see at some point.
Yep.
That's going to be great. And I don't know if I've just maybe misconstruing what they said, but they mentioned Elrond being different. You know, it might actually be a different character playing Elrond, which kind of like goes back to what I mentioned last week, that I'm kind of hoping that Kevin Owens, when he comes back saying that he's Elrond, and then and you know, in order to screw with Ezekiel, but Ezekiel just plays along with it.
Yeah, it could be the return of Hornswoggle too. We'll see.
that could also be.
Yeah. Tom, your thoughts on Ezekiel? You've seen his journey.
Yeah, on the very short list of good matches from the man, I think this was, if not at the top, and maybe it is at the top, it's at least up there. So, you know, your analysis of it, Wade, definitely helps me see his place on the card. I'm not going to sit here and say, like, oh, the man shouldn't have a job. But without... The character is such that there are just a couple light jokes that commentary can make, but without feuding with someone who is questioning his identity or focusing on his identity in one way or another, there's just not anything else there, which is better than the channel turning, you know, version of him, you know, when he was Elias. I couldn't stand it. I would turn away. But it just sort of leaves me going like, man, there are any number of people in NXT who could be filling this role and have more of a flavor to them. So, you know, you could almost just like reach into the grab bag of the NXT 2.0 roster and come up with somebody who would be a bit more entertaining in the slot.
Is there anything we haven't brought up collectively that, Tom, you want to bring up from tonight's show?
I don't think so, as I scroll through my notes, as I always do. Yeah, no, I think we pretty much hit everything. I'll just say that if anybody is watching the Great American Bash tomorrow night, I don't know how easy this will be to pick out, but it might be interesting because this is the first show that a lot of the featured wrestlers have had where they've been able to run these same matches in front of live crowds ahead of time, since the Coconut Loop has returned and these matches that we're going to see tomorrow night are some of the ones that they have been doing. So
like
I wonder
Saturday
if
Night
will
Live,
be...
like doing, you know, doing the rehearsal early in the day and then, you know, before going live on television.
Yeah, so, you know, and they can figure out what works and what doesn't. So, yeah. You know, and of course, that's the usual way that this stuff is prepped at this level. So I wonder if it'll have a different feel than, say, you know, in your house last month or whenever that was.
Yeah, yep. Javier, how about you?
I did want to bring up the Lashley Street Profits versus Theory, Gable, and Otis.
Yeah.
I thought that they'd, you know, if they, if I would, if someone said, hey, you know, we're going to fire one of you. they all seemed working really hard, and I was really surprised by the commentary really talking up Dawkins.
I know.
You know, so
they did that Saturday night too.
Yeah, so because they had been talking up Ford a lot, but it looks like, you know, Dawkins definitely has impressed people. So much so that they didn't even mention that he had eaten 22 hot dogs and was in the same shape as Otis was.
I don't. Did he get
I agree with that.
Yeah, he had 22. Okay. 22 to 23.
Oh, yep. Okay. Yeah.
I agree with that. I so rarely enjoy a six-man tag, and this was a fun one. You know, on a show that had a lot of just matches, as I keep saying, at least most of them were amusing, and this probably was chief among them, so I agree with you there, Javier. And I thought it was notable that there I did not detect any mention of the dissension between Ford and Dawkins that they've been trying to acknowledge, trying to tell the story, the early seeds of the story of, and you know, if a split does come soon, I will just go on record as saying that my hope is Dawkins being the babyface, because I think Ford has, I think everybody thinks Ford has a higher ceiling. And so if you keep him babyface, you know, maybe path of least resistance. If you switch him heel, I think you can then make him even hotter with the future turn, since things tend to work out that way when you go heel with somebody in these situations. And with where Dawkins is, I think a lot of us do see how good he has become over the years. But if he's the heel coming out of the split, it makes me worry that it would be, I want to say, you know, I guess you could say like a heavy machinery thing, but I feel like it was Naomi and Cameron who split up, and their feud was just kind of obligatory, and Cameron didn't win anything because they were like, you know, we kind of have to tell the story, but we're not really going to go anywhere with you. So I feel like Dawkins getting a chance as the babyface against Ford would be a more hopeful spot for him. So that's what I'm crossing my fingers for.
And I also think for Ford, you're better off showing yourself in the heel role and developing a bit of a more serious, sinister edge before, I think, ultimately his best role is going to be as a babyface, as a singles wrestler. But I think having part of that journey be a heel is going to give him, credibility is the word, but I don't know, build up a little more depth and layering to his character than he's been able to get as kind of the sing-song entertainer MC role that he's had. It'll get him to show some range. And then it feels like when he turns babyface, it's a bigger deal than him just being one half of a babyface tag team. He's now a heel wrestler who had some success, who's now turning face. And I'm kind of assuming that's a trajectory. Well, I shouldn't say I'm assuming it is, but I'm leaning that way, I guess, a better way to put it. What do you think, Javier, as far as that goes?
Well, I was just thinking that you were talking about, and I might have missed some of the stuff you said because I was thinking about it.
That happens. So, I'm very thought-provoking.
I listen to the fix. Because I was thinking, is it just – and correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels that whenever they're talking about, like, their relationship, it always seems like Dawkins is the one that's talking about, like, them being family. Never seems that it's Ford that brings it up, which makes me think that it is kind of almost more set up for Ford to be a heel and then, you know, spin off on his own and get, like, a harder edge. And Dawkins be more of the baby face who's, you know, like, the whole familiar thing.
Yeah, I think that's good good attention to detail, and that very well could be deliberate.
Yeah, was there anything else I missed?
No, that's good. Well, you know, just, yeah, the idea of Ford going heel before going face.
I might
have said that, Javier, but I was thinking and not listening.
Thank you. I do wonder if that's actually something that possibly could have happened. I don't know, Roman Reigns maybe might come into someone who should have turned to heel, so then he can, you know.
Yes.
He can...
Exactly. Javier, anything else you want to bring up?
No, I just mentioning worst case scenario for Liv is that she basically is like Kofi Kingston. That would be like the worst case scenario. So.
Yeah. I just want to acknowledge the Mysterios wrestled the Judgment Day.
Yeah,
just acknowledge
in their own hometown too, and that was in.
Yeah, I mean it was, you know, I mean it's pretty straightforward. I mean Mysterios got the you know, it would normally be like a win not at all worth celebrating, but when you have the Eddie Guerrero, you know, history and you use his tactics. Actually, I do want to say this, and I was going to bring this up in the Keller Hotline, but I'll throw this. I like that the setup for the DQ was right before the DQ, that it was like they were getting back at the heels for trying, like, legitimately to cheat. And so it sort of felt like, the heels got what they had coming. And I don't think they always do that with the finish, you know, when they do that kind of a finish, if it is going to be the very end of the match, because it was Priest who threw the chair into the ring and Balor was using it as a weapon and he turned to use it against Rey. And there was, I think the psychology of leading up to it made a little bit more sense than sometimes when they do it, where you felt a little bit better about the baby faces. But I don't know. Tom, is there any way to do a baby face and lying to get a DQ win? Can that ever be framed as a positive, as I'm trying to make my case for here?
I feel like that's the kind of thing that I would have found a way to, for the sake of our argument, defend in the past, but no examples are coming to mind.
Yeah.
It depends on the character, really. That's the only way you can defend it. Like, Eddie Guerrero could get away with it. There are not many Eddie Guerreros.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess you're, you know, paying tribute to him.
And
the mannerisms. All right. Very good. Well, thank you guys. I appreciate it. Thanks for joining me here on the 4th for a special roundtable format. Thanks to our callers and everybody who listens to our show on a regular basis. Hope you had a safe and enjoyable 4th of July holiday. Javier, do you want to end with any kind of a plug?
Wait until G1 comes out. And if you're going to follow that, you can follow me, VIP New Japan Prep Podcast.
Awesome. And Tom, same to you.
Sure. Along with the VIP podcasts, NXT 8 years back, and Bonus Point covering WWE developmental, the Willing Creatures Dungeons and Dragons podcast. And if you just Google that, it will come up. Willing Creatures Dungeons and Dragons. We are building up to the climax of a 5-year-long story. Granted, we only started recording these for podcasts about a year ago, so the full story is not available, unfortunately. But I mention it not just because my character has turned evil and I'm doing some really sinister stuff. So if you're curious about that, it's available right now. As a matter of fact, as we are saying this now, the most recent episode, I'm doing the most sinister thing I've ever done as this character. But I mention it because in a couple months, we will be starting a whole new storyline with new characters that is intended to last 4 years. So if that interests you, you'll want to hop on board when we get started, which will be very soon.
Very cool. Oh, go ahead, Javier. Yeah,
Tom, I actually realized a little while ago that I have a D&D character that's 32 years old, and I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Very cool. All right, thanks, guys. We'll talk to you all next time.
Thanks, Wade.
You bet.